sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And welcome to The Skeleton Boys, horror movie podcast, and I'm John.
John. Welcome to the show. This week we will review Talk to Me. As always, John will give us the plot in five words, we'll give our first thoughts, and then we will go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We are watching season 2, episode 10 of From, titled Once Upon a Time,
Season finale.
Season series? No, it's coming back. No,
it's what they're doing season 3. I don't think they're writing it right now, but
they could be writing it to themselves.
It could have been written, actually.
At least some of it, yeah. Maybe.
Oh, and it's a Canadian production. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Oh, is this Vancouver?
It's a random
Regina?
What they built this place for? I read this trivia. Let me make up something that might
Quebec?
Be true. They built it for a military base outside of it somewhere, and it was a standing town, and then it became a ghost town, so they just kind of kept it for the most part, and then they started shooting TV shows there.
Classic Canadians.
We would never do that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're done. We're done. Season 2, episode 10. John, what did you think? You've been slightly down on the show lately?
Yeah, I feel like my suspicions are possibly correct on a couple of assumptions I had about what was going on.
Do tell.
I think it is a controlled environment. I mean, at this point, it kind of really feels like they are being tested. It almost seems like they're seeing how far they can make these people do things or how, like, yeah, before they crack and potentially die or kill other people. Which we kind of see at the end of the episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I forgot the name of the character. I don't think it was important. But the guy whose mom or forgot somebody fell asleep and the thing attacked, which we found out is a wormy blood, was another sort of weird vengeful thing that was killing people in their sleep. And boy, it brought that to town. The guy who's like, is it his mom? I'm probably getting this wrong.
It is not his mom. This is his wife or girlfriend, roommate.
Oh.
I don't know.
Something, somebody, right? Yeah. I don't know.
They weren't important characters in terms of, like, we didn't spend a lot of time with them.
No. But he goes out to, they're helping Donna put away all the weapons and shit because they don't want people to panic and shoot each other. And he goes with another guy that I don't know his name because he's another random character. I'm like, I guess these guys are going to die.
Yeah.
And he slits his throat. The dude whose friend got killed in her sleep. How would you feel? Because I'm just going to spoil the end real quick.
The big spoiler that
mom.
Okay.
And in case you're listening for the first time, I am terrible with names. And even
Tabitha. Yes.
Tabitha finally finds this lighthouse thing.
Yes.
To potentially try to help release the children that she's been seeing, the little, like, gothic
Smeagol golem looking kids. Yes, yeah,
exactly, kids. Which I had forgotten that she actually did see him already when she fell through the floor at the beginning of the season and Victor's trying to help her and she sees the kid in one of them, and I forgot about that. But she only finds the lighthouse, doesn't find the kids, and then that kid that was Victor's friend when he was a kid and now son's friend.
Okay. Yeah.
Son whose name is Ethan.
I got other names. in my brain.
Is like she's up in the lighthouse, like overlooking everything. Finally gets to see what's going on around her, and he's all like, "Hey, yo, my bad, girl, but this is the only way." Yeet, and pushes her out the fucking window.
Yeah,
and she falls, which you would assume is to her death. But then at the very end of the episode, she wakes up in a hospital bed. And I was thinking, how would you feel if at the next season, at some point, dude who got shot by Boyd, because that guy is trying to kill Boyd for blaming him for all this happening.
Right.
And Boyd is able to like shoot the guy and kill him. What if that guy shows up there too?
Shows up. Oh, okay. I think dead is dead. I'm going to go on a limb and say that. But there are ghosts, right?
There are ghosts.
So you can go that random character who they introduced at the end of the run of the show's episodes here. He could come back as a ghost. Yes. But I don't think he's coming back.
No.
Back to the real world. Like, because you're saying like Tabitha is out of the experiment, out of whatever it is that trapped him there.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought the biggest thing was that Ellis and Fadmia got married. I thought that was what you were going to start with. But okay, we could talk about Tabitha.
That's why I feel like Donna's a bad guy. That's why my suspicions there were like, this has got to be true. Because why is Donna so like, Boyd, you might die in the next hour. Who cares? I don't know why I'm making her into Jack Nicholson, but you gotta be with your son. Your son's gonna get married, Boyd.
Yeah,
and you're my number one guy.
So, but yeah, this isn't the first time I've seen this. Saw this on a little show called Lost. Where they got off of the island. And yeah, so not too surprised about that. Was surprised. Okay, so in that scene, they say the doctor tells her that they found her, some hikers found her on the mountainside or some shit, right? They found her and they brought her to the hospital. And then she looks outside.
Yeah, I just remember them saying that they just found her at the base of a mountain.
Yeah, something like that, right? And then she's out, basically. She went through the trees and got on the lighthouse and made it out. So interestingly that...
Well, they did say, like, hey, we found you at the base of the mountain. You know, the mountain, the one that's right outside of that lighthouse. It's kind of by that area where they do all those military experiments with those people.
That we're not allowed to cross.
I think is what they said, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? What are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, you know, like Donna, you know, she's in control of all of it. I'm like, what?
I would be surprised if we see Tabitha at all next season. We may see her like in the end episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think she's coming back until
then. I think they wrote her off. I think they wrote her off for now. And she's probably like, I was nominated for an Oscar. Why am I in this movie show? And I'm going to focus. Being on the show wants me to refocus on my acting, so get me off the show, please. So she basically is now on the outside, and we probably won't revisit that, which I think is kind of interesting. Changes things up a little bit because now her family's left behind. We have, you know, the kids and Jim there, which I'm assuming they're just going to think that she's dead. But then Victor can easily tell them. That was probably, like, I thought this was a really good episode. Like, I really liked that Boyd finding a solution to the thing that he brought to the town, that is kind of confirms that we're not only dealing with the things that live underground that attack them at night, we're also dealing with, like, there's other creatures, supernatural things in the forest.
Oh, for everybody else to finally get on the same page, right? Like, everything we've seen, but which is making Boyd seem unstable is finally coming true. That's true. I hadn't thought about that.
I like that Boyd was actually really close at the end of last season with Sarah. They saw the lighthouse, only that they stopped short of it. But they were close to finding, because they saw the lighthouse.
Because what was going on? The spiders were attacking them, right? Because the spiders were attacking them during the day, too.
Right.
I think they went into the tent, put the the insignia, the what do you call it, the stone or whatever.
The lighthouse?
To ward off. No, the little stones.
That oh, they use, yeah, the talisman. Yeah, the talisman. Yeah.
And then they wake up to like web everywhere, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'd forgotten about, yeah, the spiders, and we have the cicadas that burn you for some reason and possess your, take your soul. The base of the lighthouse, question mark.
I think what's going on is, I just had a thought, because like I think what might be going on is that the things that have happened there that die stay there. You know what I mean? Mm. You know, like, because the creature, the spiders, the people that live underground were all there before, and based on the end of season one drawings, and there was like the lighthouse, and there was like people in boats and stuff. They died there, but stayed there. And they kind of see, like, when new people go there, they kind of, they're, it's like a haunted place. So they kind of see them again. Does that kind of make sense? Because yeah, they're not really gone. Because I think a scene that is telling is when Boyd tries to find a solution, he just goes back into the forest, uses the, what is it? The, fuck. What is it? Like the fire to like reanimate where he was before. So he's able to find where he was.
Yeah.
Because that place is there, but there's ruins of it. But through magic, quote unquote, he's able to kind of go there and stop the ballerina. So you know what I'm, you see what I'm getting at? Like,
yeah, I just, that is one pretty good theory, because all these ghosts that we're seeing are the people that have died there.
Yep.
It's not like everybody's seeing the priest, right? It's only Boyd.
Yeah, exactly. Like characters that have died are talking to Jade, talking to Boyd.
But I think it's always the characters that they each connected with the most. So I don't know if it's like, because it sounds like just their conscious talking, not like the actual characters talking, right?
Yes. Did you yes. agree with that? Yes. They're not so, actual. I agree. They're not actual, like, they could actually be ghosts, right? Because doesn't Jade have that interaction with the dead bartender?
That's right. What I mean. I think that was the only person he actually connected with before all that, too, right? In the first season.
I think a lot of people went to the bartender to talk to him. Yeah. Like a bartender, like the class, you know, like.
It's just, I think there's like a lot of theories we can come up with on this, because the part of me is also like, are they all in a coma right now? And then this is how they're kind of doing the test. And I just started thinking about like the movie Dreamscape.
Mm.
So what if they're projecting all these things, and maybe some people are closer to death than others, and they're trying to help them not?
I think that there is a evil haunted thing there. Wormy blood guy. Because don't they say something to that effect, that they're laughing at you? And yeah, they're laughing at you, Boyd, because you let him out. He was trapped there, and then you brought him back to people, which is what he wanted. Because I believe that he needed three people to sort of imprison him or something, right?
Oh.
And when those three people died, he chose Randall, Mari, and Julie, right? They're the ones that were,
yeah,
they were the ones that were there, so. I think that there's assumption now is that there's probably like there's probably one central big scary monster thing, and then there's like other smaller monster horror things. It's very Stephen King. Very Stephen King-ish.
Because if they do go very Stephen King-ish, we're gonna find out these are the worst fears for certain people in the town.
Or yeah, they're gonna Langlier them.
Yeah, or like so. this thing is just kind of feeding off of their collective fear.
You're right. Yeah,
they're probably in like someplace called like Dairy or something, and then
yeah,
they need a giant space turtle to come out and fight this thing.
I want to say they even said that Tabitha found out she was in Maine. Isn't that where that hospital is, dude? So,
but I'm just waiting. We need the space turtle. I know.
I know. Yeah.
They didn't want the space turtle in the Ant movies. I understand why.
Yeah. But
we need to see it on the screen.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it's just like some haunted thing that brings people there, then traps them there, and then they haunt away. The only weird thing is that I think they're like,
oh, that they forgave that bald guy who shot What's his name? First step, what's his name?
What bald guy? Oh, I'm blanking. What bald guy?
The bald guy that stabbed Ellis. Everybody just kind of
Everybody hates him. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, they just kind of just are going on with it.
I also noticed that the Sarah Myers. it didn't occur to me that her hair was starting to gray. Like, you can see how stressed she's been going, getting or whatever.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I was like, that's an interesting little...
That's a good detail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems like she was tied to this place. I think she helped Boyd get the hint or, like, figure out what he needed to do in that moment. So.
And then Christy and her fiance, something happened. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't think anything else happened.
All that important happened, right? Aside from the only reason Randall and daughter
Julie
get released from their possessed state where they keep screaming. I think there was like one moment where somebody was like, oh, the kid, the fucking son, whatever the kid's name, I don't care.
Ethan?
Ethan, sure. It was like,
yeah.
Yelling, why is she doing that? Make her stop. I'm like, oh my God, just kick the kid out of the room. I hate when they have like the kids introduced like that. Like, why is the kid there in the, whatever. They get released because Boyd talks to his wife and his wife's trying to convince him not to destroy the music box that randomly is in the
right
place.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, he thinks about it and he's like, nah, fuck that shit. And he smashes the toy box. These are all actual lines from the
movie. Yeah. I think it's interesting that I forgot to mention that Victor took her to the bottle tree, and we have seen this bottle tree, but I think there's multiple bottle trees. I think Boyd and Sarah saw the bottle tree, which is essentially just the tree with the hung bottles on it, has seen it before at the end of season one.
That's where Jade saw or got attacked by the soldiers.
That was in like the attic mountain. Like, there's like this door cellar, and
not that particular part. Not where he randomly sees.
Oh, okay.
Victor hit. No, he's out in the, remember where he thinks he got stabbed by that soldier. I want to say it was like a Confederate soldier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was by that bottle tree. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
But supposedly, so now I think this is where it becomes important, is that like Victor says that the trees are moving. So that leads me to believe that this tree that Tabitha used to get to the lighthouse is going to be gone. It's not going to be there anymore, obviously, right? And Tabitha will possibly this could be how Victor's mom and sister escaped and left Victor there. That's my guess. My guess is they're not dead. My guess is they went through the bottle tree, left through the lighthouse. And I think, I guess it's kind of confirmed that the dog and the boy are good. The more and more I think about this whole thing, it's more and more sounds like Stephen King, dude. Sounds very much
just
like
a very convoluted style Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah. The more they're like expanding and opening up the story and the lore of the show, it sounds more and more like Stephen King,
J.J. Abrams style. Like.
Exactly, yeah. Which, you are famously not a Stephen King fan.
Me?
Yeah. Like the Lord of the Rings. You hate Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, and Stephen King.
Well, it is true. I haven't read all the books, so I'm a bad horror fan.
Yeah.
I have read like three of them, four of them. No, I usually don't like Stephen King TV adaptations. This is true.
Yes. Langoliers? I don't know why you don't like the Langoliers.
No, that one's okay.
Yeah.
I want to say Stephen King's best adaptation that goes under the radar, in my opinion, is Flight of the Navigator, right? Is that not Flight of the Navigator? What's it called? Let us know in the comments below.
Night Flyer. I think it is called The Night Flyer.
Night Flyer?
I think that's a movie. Yeah. I don't know. Is that a TV show? I don't remember that being a TV show. Or like a TV. Made for TV movie. Yeah, I don't remember that being. You're not a fan of the Tommyknockers?
You know, I rewatched it and I was like, oh, wow. Maybe it's just because it doesn't age very well. But
I think that, in my opinion, if it, we're going off topic, but if we're talking about like underappreciated Stephen King event TV show, which I don't even think they do anymore, right? There's no way they do this anymore, is Storm of the Century. That's the one I like. That's some dark. Oh. That's a really good one. That's some dark shit in that one.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I mentioned Flight of the Navigator. R.I.P. Paul Rubens. I guess that's probably why I said it.
Yeah, I remember that movie. That was a good movie. As a kid, I loved it. I thought for the longest time that was Fred Savage. That is not Fred Savage. Is it Fred Savage?
No.
It's not Fred Savage. For the longest time, I thought it was Fred Savage when I was a kid, but it isn't.
It is a guy named Joey Kramer. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was also in Runaway, and I love that movie. Movie that nobody's seen. The one where Gene Simmons is a bad guy who makes little robots that are supposed to be like spiders, but
yeah,
they really look like big aluminum blocks with legs.
It's a Michael Crichton, right? Michael Crichton. It's an adaptation of one of his books. Is it Michael Crichton?
Yeah, Michael Crichton. He also directed it.
That's the other important part of that. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
But I just want to say RIP Paul Rubens. I was fortunate enough to work with him.
Oh,
and
cool.
Very, very sweet guy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, RIP to Paul Rubens.
And also, I don't want to give away how the sausage is made, but I want to say happy birthday to arguably the very first goth song ever written by Bauhaus. Called Bela Lugosi is Dead. Came out this day in 1979.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
But now everybody's going to know when we...
Fuck.
Because everybody's clamoring to do the research and figure it out.
Break the illusion.
From.
Yeah.
Season finale of From.
Yeah.
It was okay. I didn't mind it. I mean,
I didn't mind it either.
I liked it.
I
liked it, but it wasn't like the way I felt after the end of season one where I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. I think I have to temper my expectations a little bit for this show. Still good. Still better than Chapel 8. So...
But also another how we felt like Yellow Jackets week season finale also.
Yeah, Yellow Jackets fell off a cliff.
Not as weak as that though. Not as that was bad.
That was super bad. Yeah, they're having really hard sophomore seasons. Yeah, slumps.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was really bad. That was disappointing. And I love Yellow Jackets. I named all my horses in Tears of the Kingdom after Yellow Jacket characters. So yeah, I love Yellow Jackets. But yeah, it was a rough season. From I thought was okay. I think it definitely had some dull moments, spun its wheels, but it was okay. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there were a lot of moments where I'm like, wow, they're really going there. And then they didn't, I don't know. But then, yeah, the ending was good. I don't know.
Fine. It's good. Yeah. It's good enough. Works. Alrighty. Let's move over to our main review of Talk to Me. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny. 5 words. Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yes, but real quick, what is the name of that song? It's been stuck in my head since watching the movie, and I know I could Google it, but I wanted, because I don't have... I have more time to do shit like this. I'm trying to remember without looking it up.
Okay.
He goes, talk to me like lovers do. Who is that?
Isn't that Erasure?
That makes sense. Either Erasure or Eurythmics, right?
Could be the Eurythmics. When you said that sound, I was so sure about my answer. Now I think it's the Eurythmics.
Oh, it's called Here Comes the Rain Again by the Eurythmics.
Oh, you see? I was wrong.
No, actually, this is wrong too. We're never going to know.
All right, wait, no, we can't move on. This is important.
Unless I'm just remembering the lyrics wrong too. That's a big possibility just because we saw the movie.
No, you're right. Here Comes the Rain. Well.
All right. So here we are. Eurythmics, talk to me. Like lovers do. That's it. All right, now you got to cut it off there, or else we can't air this portion of the show anymore.
It's I want to kiss maybe, like maybe lovers do. I want to kiss like wait. No, you're right. It's so baby, talk to me like lovers do. Walk with me like lovers do. Talk to me like lovers do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, you're welcome, guys.
You're welcome.
There you go. Now you have all the
big rhythmic fans we are.
Tell your friends. Well, I mean, Send Me an Angel is probably one of my favorite songs, I'll admit.
That's not the Arrhythmics. Right. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Look at us. You're probably right, John. But, you're more musically inclined.
But I want to say it's a cover. That allegedly everybody has covered, so never mind. Australian band Real Life did Send Me an Angel initially back in 83, and then everybody covered
The Scorpions it. Covered it too. Hell yeah.
All right.
Anyways, we're not a music podcast, so let's focus on. Talk to me, John. Five word thought summary.
For the horror movie Talk to Me, set in Australia, apparently.
It's apparently, yeah.
I was blissfully unaware of this fact going into the movie.
Yeah.
Coming in at number three. It's actually an alt title. Put her there, my guy.
Yep.
Okay. And coming in at number two, it is an alt title, but also a summary of the movie. Gotta hand it to you.
Yeah.
And coming in at number one for my plot summary for Talk to Me, Not Like Lovers Do. Worst game of patty cake.
Yeah. Yeah. So we should preface this by saying one of us didn't see all of the movie because he was buying coffee and popcorn.
One of us missed a little bit of the cold open because popcorn and nitro cold brew from Groundworks was more important to me. Sitting in the theater and I was like, I want to crack this open, but I also like, I don't know why I had all these like weird thoughts, like what if people think I'm drinking a beer? And I was like, wait, but they serve beer here, right?
Yeah,
it's a coffee, what the fuck am I doing? So I just like
that was funny. Yeah, there's like only two other people within the theater besides us. So but it's important that we tell people that, you know, full disclosure, it's some of us. Oh, didn't see the trailers or the ads or.
that stuff for me is not as important anymore because the internet rules all now. So remember when you would have to go to a movie to see trailers?
I love the trailers.
It was so good. It was so much fun back then. Now it's like, oh, I'll just like rewatch it when I get home.
I used to love watching on E. What's it called? The Coming Sooner.
Oh, yes. The Coming Attractions.
Coming Attractions. Yes, yeah. That's exactly what it's called. Coming Attractions, where they just play all the trailers. And the tagline, I never got it, was... I'm forgetting it. The trailers are the feature or something like that, which is so true. Like, I just love watching the trailers for stuff. That was cool. This is pre-internet, too. So...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. There was internet, but it wasn't like... It was like AOL.
This was also during this time, right? In like the, I want to say, very early 90s, right? When they did this a lot.
Yes.
Which also they made fun of in The Critic, which is a great TV show.
Amazing TV show, yeah.
The Coming Attractions thing. You know what? Never mind. Let's move on. I started thinking about The Critic and I was like, man, everybody was making. Oh, well, during this time, the internet was also, I think, a massive sort of like 2 football field size thing that was like a supercomputer to send information from one supercomputer to another supercomputer. And, you know.
Yeah.
We had no use for shit like that.
No, absolutely not. All right. So. We should probably talk about Talk to Me now. Now that we've relayed all our theater experiences in our past here. Talk to Me. What did you think?
You know, I actually rather enjoyed this movie. I liked it. I liked it kind of like on the same level I liked Smile. I think they're both like fun, like solo entries into like the new, you know, what's going on in horror today.
Yeah.
I know the directors were asked, like, would you do a sequel? And they got very excited. Like, of course we would. But like, you know, A24 has got to make enough money with this one first.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I really liked it, too. I think that it has like a really strong premise. They have really, really confident, like competent directors, really nice acting and performances, too.
Oh, yeah. I got to shout out that kid. Oh, well, yeah. Everybody was fantastic in this movie, but
yeah, you're talking about Riley. It's his first movie, I think I read in some of the trivia. Joe Bird played the younger brother. But the lead, also Sophie Wilde, was excellent in this. And
her first feature film lead too, right?
Yeah, and I think you're right in that. Like, this is kind of like a really nice, like, modern horror movie.
Yeah.
So,
like, I feel like it does the whole creepypasta thing where, what does it do that I think is like a really nice contemporary take? Kind of like The Ring a little bit, right? Except you're not watching something and dying 7 days later. It's just something that's like a cursed item, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of like wandering around the earth and just refuses to go away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
what I'm gathering.
Yeah. That's what I get too. Like, they have a great premise for a horror movie that is original that we haven't seen yet. The take, like, essentially they're using a hand to conjure and dismembered hand to conjure spirits.
Allegedly,
and they use it to just basically fuck around like kids. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. As you will, and they film it and they have parties around it and stuff like that, as kids will, because kids, you know, make questionable moral choices at this age, and so that was kind of fun, you know. So that was a great take on that, and I thought were intense. I thought like the direction, I thought that like a lot of the sound design was actually really good.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it was great. Yeah. It's also, I think, something new to us is we're seeing an Australian horror movie for one, and two, that it deals with grief. You know, we've never seen.
Yeah.
I don't think Australia makes horror movies.
Yeah.
Horror grief
ones. Yeah. We do love our Aussies here on the Skeleton Boys. Yeah.
The actor Zoe Tarakis, they play the character Haley. I really liked their look because to me it screams very 90s style bully. Like, everything about the attire and like the haircut, the middle part, kind of mullety. I'm like, wow, it's like every sort of bully you would get from like the late 90s. So I automatically knew that character was going to be kind of like a bully character.
Right. Yeah.
Also, because the 90s are coming back.
God. Yeah. Sadly. Yes. The suffering through
any Gecko apparel. There are no fear. I see no fear caps.
Yeah. Also, it was incredibly smart to cast Miranda Otto, who's terrific. I haven't seen much of her. She's famously was in the Lord of the Rings movies. For me, that's probably the first time I saw her, and she's excellent in this. Yeah, really good in this.
Great.
Yeah, and I want to also say that Haley character and her friend, were they indigenous people as well?
I want to say they were the, I'd imagine so.
I think that's really smart casting. Because really smart to cast.
Too, yeah.
Yeah. And the, they did a good job because it kind of shows you that there's a wide range and a dynamic to Australia's population.
Australia's not just
fucking white people and
white beefcakes. I mean, if people don't know the history of Australia at this point, they were like all the criminals the English didn't want. They just threw them on this island, and that's why there's white people in Australia for the most part. Yeah.
And I think they did.
Yeah. I mean, also, I think it was because it was subtle and it wasn't like a focal point giving that person, Zoe Tourakis, I'm probably butchering that name, but giving and I think it's like a cool thing that's happening now in film and television. It is a trans character, but that's not even like a focal point.
Right. That's what I thought. That's kind of was what I was expecting. But like you said, it was not really like a thing brought up.
Yeah.
I want to talk about also that they do this really cool thing in horror in this particular movie, in that the main character makes really bad choices. And I think you and our senior social media director commented that they hated the character.
I didn't hate the character. I think I was trying to be more defensive about it. I think I was, it's a lot of, the movie really deals with grief, right? And the depths you go to, especially because at this point, this character, she's going through her denial phase. And because I'm not too familiar with the customs of Australia, so Remembrance Day, I'm assuming it's the third year that her mother has been passed.
Okay.
Is what I think I was gathering.
Okay.
So, you know how like these things just don't happen overnight. You know, sometimes it takes that long. And then her going through denial phase and just latching onto whatever to refuse to believe that her mother potentially could have killed herself.
Right. Yeah.
So instead of believing that.
So Mia is like our main character, and she has a mother who committed suicide and is kind of has a strained relationship with her dad, and kind of creates like a second family for herself with her best friend, her best friend's brother, and the mother. And she kind of
no idea how that confused the shit out of me for like half the movie.
What confused you?
I legit thought that they were actually like a family. So I was like,
oh,
so is she the dad's new wife? And these are like whatever. And then like, that wasn't the case, right? I was like, I don't understand.
It did take me a second to figure out that dynamic, because when we first meet that character's, Mia is picking up Riley, the little boy, and they made it seem like they were related, right?
Yes.
But they're
yes,
just really close. Exactly. Yeah, they're just like...
Well, because also that Riley asks her, how did mom die, is what it looked like.
Yeah.
Or what it sounded like to me. So I'm like, okay. So I kept trying to figure out, and I think I probably missed like a couple of minutes of the movie just trying to understand.
Open your nitro coffee. <Just kidding>.
I guess I didn't have to shock
that. Yeah, and slam it on the ground. And, as you did, yeah. No, but that's actually a great point, because I think it did take me a second to figure out how Maya fit into this family. Like, I didn't know if she was, that was her best friend, if that was her girlfriend, if that was her sister. It did take a second to figure out what was like the dynamics of the family.
Yeah, and I think to further add to the confusion, at one point, a sort of like ghostly figure says that the character Riley might need help or something like that. And I'm like, okay, so they're for sure like brother and sister. I just couldn't wrap it around my head for some reason. I was like, what the fuck's going
on? Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I like that, the Mia character is kind of like, she's an outsider, right? Because of this other stuff going on with her. And then when she finds out there's like this thing that can communicate with the dead, she like just starts making all the wrong decisions, you know, for herself and for other people. And then she kind of gets like addicted to it. I mean, I think you made the point when, after we watched it, that like, it's kind of maybe an allegory for drug addiction, what they're doing. Cause they get, yeah. they get like a little bit of a, sensation out of whatever, you know, communicating
drug addiction or like alcoholism, right. After trying to deal with emotions and grief mm-hmm. and how you think at the time it makes you feel happy and you think everybody else is seeing you look happy too. But, when they do this thing, they get like possessed, right? They don't look good. In fact, they look terrible, but everybody's mm-hmm. having fun watching them do that.
And I think they did a really smart thing because I think the best horror movie characters make bad decisions like her. Like I want to... Yeah,
because there wouldn't be a story. I mean, I think the whole point... Oh,
right? True. Yeah. I mean, so, because a lot of times movies, things are happening to the main character. It's more fun when the character's creating all of the issues for themselves. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what's that movie? Fuck. Sinister. That was something that I pointed out in Sinister with Ethan Hawke. Ethan Hawke makes some really bad choices in that movie for his family. Basically puts him in jeopardy almost immediately over his obsession with writing and stuff like that. And then, or even.
Even though spooky shit's happening, yeah.
Or even like, you know, Ash from Evil Dead. He makes really stupid decisions that continues to make things worse for himself and everybody around him.
So my favorite thing about Ash from Evil Dead, which I am a big fan, is those decisions may be ill-advised, but every time he makes any decision, which was like on purpose via Sam and Ted when they were making the movies, just making him a coward.
Yeah.
So whatever he can do to get out of a situation quickly, regardless of the repercussions.
Exactly.
It's really funny. But yeah, this young woman is just making all these poor decisions because she's desperate for closure, I guess.
Something. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Something.
Cause there's
she doesn't know what either. Yet.
Yeah. There's a moment early in the movie where, one of the kids sees her mom, right? Or something? Or talks to her mom?
Well, she maybe talks to her mom through... Is it a spoiler to mention who she kind of thinks she talks to her mom through?
No, yeah, yeah. I think there's a moment before, which is why she continues to want to... go through the... commune with the spirits or whatever that
because I don't remember that, but I do know I feel like she kept doing it because she just wanted acceptance. Like, it's bad enough that she's going through grief, but everybody thinks she's weird.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna point that out. Even the other characters, like, why'd you bring her? Like, it's like, yeah, you know what I mean. And she even has, even though she has a best friend, her best friend's dating somebody that she held his hand at one point. So it's like this weird love triangle.
But they were like boyfriend and girlfriend back in like eighth grade or something. And now
clearly meant more to Maya than to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't understand that. I feel like they just added that character to confuse and convolute things for the main character even more as she struggles with accepting things, or, you know,
or yeah, she's afraid. Cause like very early on in the movie, she doesn't kill the kangaroo.
That's right.
Yeah. She cowards away from killing it. But to be fair, I would have a hard time doing that as well. Even though if I did see an animal suffering, I would have a hard time running over an animal to put it out of its...
I wouldn't fucking do that only because I think realistically in the real world, you have to call the service or somebody to do that, and you might get in major fucking trouble if somebody finds out that you purposely killed an animal, even if it was to put it out of its misery.
I think that they mentioned that
The friend does,
yeah, that you didn't even call the services. Well, I thought it was...
Not her sister, by the way.
Not her sister or girlfriend, yeah. It's really confusing at first. But yeah, really liked it. Do you have any other thoughts before we do spoilers?
Oh, that the more I thought about it, the more, as we had discussed, certain groups maybe thought that the main character was too annoying for making such bad decisions all the time.
Right.
But the entire scenario, like, these kids are bringing around this hand that, by the way, looks like a mannequin hand, sort of, like, that's just, like, you know, been lopped off. But I was actually trying to look at how they made it, and I was like, that's pretty cool. And then people tagged all over it. And you can tell it's been all over the world because it's in different languages. They see what it is, and then they put it on the internet, and they continue to do it. So it's not everybody's culpable, in my opinion.
That's true. I mean, yeah.
What happened in that situation was bad on her end, for sure. But it's also like it was a desperation moment. But anybody could have stopped it. You know, like everybody just kind of watched and was like, "Oh, I can't believe she did that." I'm like, "You were right there, guys."
That's true. But I think she kind of says, "Well, we can talk about it in spoilers. Let's go to spoilers."
Wait. No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
The main kickoff of the story plot is that the youngest boy, Riley, wants to do this. He's not allowed to do it. But when he does do it, the sister says no. You know, very adamantly says no. But Mia says yes. Because Riley's like, well, I'll do it for like 60 seconds or something. Because I think there's like a time limit, right? There's like, you can only do it for like 90 seconds, right? Yeah, before they got to pull him out.
And they settled on 50 seconds. Right. Yeah, I think she says something to the effect of, because the sister was pretty, yeah, you're right, pretty adamant about like, no. Like, he's not going to fucking do that. What are you doing?
Yeah, she.
The friend too, like Riley's friend was there, the shitty friend.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
Really funny. He's, yeah, a funny character. Another, you know, like very aesthetically 90s looking kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like Terminator 2 style best friend looking kid.
Yeah.
She's like very adamant about like, no, before our main character. It was like, you don't have to be a bitch about everything or something like that is what she says. Do you remember that? Because it was enough to upset her and she just left.
Right.
And then the boyfriend left too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out too, that they're like, I said no, and I'm leaving this room with everybody and the hand still in this room. So I don't know how that, yeah. What's the decision? And again,
yeah. How is it like, oh, this is all your fault? Like, you could have just grabbed your brother by the arm, you know, stormed out.
Yeah. Even though it's her house. It was her house that did the stupid thing. So
yeah,
it's kind
of faults to be made here. Yeah, yeah.
To be fair, she did leave with the boyfriend, and when the boyfriend does the whatever ritual, that these basically insinuate that he doesn't find her attractive.
Yeah, according to these things that can manipulate. Yeah,
yeah,
or read your thoughts or whatever.
Right,
and I'm guessing the boyfriend just really, really wanted to make out with this bulldog that they have.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor thing.
Like, whatever possessed the boyfriend, like, purposely made out with that dog for, like, an uncomfortable amount of time. And everybody's recording it. And I like when, oh my God, what's her name? Who said it? Was it, somebody mentions just get the thought dog out of here and we can continue to do it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny. What was it, Mia? It might have been. Yeah, and then they continue to do it. And I think it was just, you know why she keeps doing it? It wasn't because she thought she was talking to her mom. I think she keeps doing it because she mentions how good it felt. Like, I kind of like a really like heroin or something, like, oh, it just felt so good. Oh man. Like,
yeah. No, yeah, that's definitely part of it. But I think one of them says that the mom, when so each time they like touch the hand, they say, talk to me, a different spirit conjures, and then they welcome them into their body for like 90 seconds and then pull them out. It's kind of like the ritual. At some point, yeah, the mother is there because they say the name that only the mother called Mia or something. And that's how she knew that It was somebody that was...
I like distinctly remember that being when Riley does it after all and starts talking to her and mentions her name. And then that's like, oh, that was my mom. That's why I know, because nobody knows that name except for her.
Right.
Wait, you're probably right. Yeah. Then who was it?
I don't remember. Yeah. It's one of the characters. Mm. It's either the boyfriend. It happens during that set of scenes. And when she allows Riley to do it, I think we can make the assumption that there was something that saw Riley, because when we first did this thing, they say like, oh, I like that kid. I want that kid. And so it was kind of like they wanted...
It's when Mia does it, right? For the first time.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, Mia does it. And then whatever is there says that I want the little boy. I want to possess the little boy.
It was the obviously drowned woman, right?
The drowned woman...
Oh, which, by the way, the effects, like when you actually see these ghosts, like a lot of them are really ghastly looking.
Yeah.
like very good.
And so when Riley did it, he got like possessed and like kept there by whatever this evil thing was. But this evil creature, spirit, whatever the fuck it was strong enough to like project Mia's dead mom and like manipulate.
Oh, you see, I mean, yes, did that do that? I don't think it's a singular thing. I just think the hand is a conduit, right?
Right.
Because the very end suggests something very different. It suggests that these are singular like ghosts that come and...
Yeah. Yeah. It's just whatever that particular ghost was.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause strong. The lady, I remember this cause I was trying not to laugh, just because of the choice of words. It's just cause I'm not very familiar with the slang in Australia.
Okay.
the drowned woman has possessed Mia, and Mia looks the Sophie did a fucking great job. She was scary looking. And it's like, oh, they like, yeah. And pointing to Riley, and Riley's freaking out. Like, he'll split ya. He's going to split ya. He'll split ya. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And I kept thinking of bananas for some reason. So I was trying not to laugh. but there are a lot of moments that I think are intentionally supposed to be funny.
No. Yeah. Like, that's something we should say, is that this movie's funny. There's a nice,
it's good.
There's some good comedy in the movie, surprisingly, even though it's very, you know, it's a horror movie. It's serious.
Yeah. And if feet sucking's your thing.
There's a nice long sequence of that. So.
And then they bring it up again. And it's just so funny.
Yeah.
That's another moment where like the boyfriend just like admits what happened. I'm like, you dingus. You could have just been like, I don't know.
He literally could have said anything else. Possessed. Yeah. He's like, she sucked my feet. Something like that. Yeah.
Why is it so hard to say, like, I think Mia might have been possessed again and was, like, sucking on my feet because she was freaking out. Like, it's not hard to believe after everything they've seen.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's... No, this movie's actually really funny. Like, really great comedy bits. And I think towards the end of this movie, I think you're right in that it is random, but whatever that particular thing was is a particularly powerful evil thing. Because when the end of this movie... They are trying to save Riley by trying different stuff. And Mia is manipulated by, quote unquote, her mom to try to sacrifice Riley and eventually kill her dad. But it was by accident.
The dad part, yeah, because they projected an image of the dad being possessed attacking her.
That's right. Yeah.
And then the dad actually did break in because he was concerned. And this is right after the dad shared the suicide note with her, and she just refused to believe it because she thinks she's convinced she's talking to her mom.
And the whole time these evil spirits are trying to convince them to kill Riley. So is if they kill Riley, basically they get to keep him.
Yeah.
And so Mia is about to kill him, but she sacrifices herself. She kind of, I don't know, she's like tripping out, right? She kind of sees the end of the boy gets better. The family moves on. She sees her dead dad, which leads to...
Yeah, it's kind of the... is it the...
She doesn't know she's dead.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's kind of like the... is it Indian culture's idea of what happens when you die? Right? I think famously Into the Void made a whole movie.
About that. Yeah.
So she's kind of like jumping through time and not understand what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
Until she looks at her hands and sees that they're all fucked up. But I thought it was interesting to think that possibly now she is stuck with this hand being a conduit, is like latched onto like what her soul or whatever.
Yeah, That so at the very end, she sees the hand. She sees a candle, and she's like, goes straight to the candle, sees the hand, touches the hand, and it's just somebody, different people doing the ritual.
In a different country.
Different country, yeah. So that just leads me to believe that, like, she's like any of these other ghosts that probably were just aimlessly wandering around, not knowing what was going on, sees the candle like a moth to the flame, goes to it, and then whatever, they connect with it.
Yeah, and that's when she's aware of, like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I don't think she has any... I want to say, the way I interpreted that was, like, she doesn't have any recognition. I don't think she knows she's even dead. I don't think she knows what's going on yet. That's the way I interpreted that. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like the hand thing was for the audience. It wasn't for her, even though she saw it. But
I wanted to guess that that's the moment she realized, is my guess. Because you're right, her running away or like trying to run and seeing the family get better, her dad get better and leaving the hospital sad. I think that was just like a desperation and screaming like, oh, fuck.
She doesn't know she's dead, yeah.
Because she did see her, like the car accident, and then she just kind of got, you know, like as soon as she dies, she sees the scene, she's confused, and then she turns around, she's back in the hospital. So yeah, it's like a...
like a passing of time.
That's why I'm thinking when she... grabs the hand is where in my head I think she's aware that she might be dead.
I saw it as that's how the process works. Like that's they just but from the other side. That's kind of like just how I saw it. She does have that like shock look at the very end, but I took that more as it can go both ways, honestly. Her either having the recognition or not having the recognition of it. It's kind of left ambiguous. I don't think there's evidence either way that she understands what she's experiencing is what she was doing earlier in the movie with the hand.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I guess there's no real way of telling. I just know that I think in the movie, she is the one that does it the most to talk to dead people.
Right.
Because she stole the hand for like a good portion of the movie.
She's the one who... didn't blow out the candle, lasted the longest, right? Like, and she even did it with nobody helping her, right? So who blew out the candle? We don't know, right? She could be
she just didn't. There's three parts to this ritual. They light the candle to mm-hmm. open the door. They grab the hand and say, talk to me. They see what's in front of them, and to allow that thing into their body, they got to say, let me in. Oh, I let you in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she only did the part where she's like, talk to me. And she just never let these things in so she could talk to me.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Very good point.
Because at one point she's desperate to figure out how to help Riley. They try a couple of things and she sees a little girl in front of her. And then the little girl, the ghost side little girl says, I let you in. So she gets an image of where Riley's at getting like attacked by these. Like it kind of looks like society.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
So I was half expecting a head to pop out of a butt, but no.
Yeah, it was. That's the first thing I thought of. I was like, should I tell John? No, I'm not going to tell John.
And that part also, I feel like you can question whether that was real or not, right? I think the assumption is like that was a projected image to freak her out. Right? Or was that actually happening? And of course, Riley's not going to remember any of this.
Good question. They don't explore that if he remembers.
Yeah, because I was wondering if that little ghost girl was really that evil or not.
So they basically, I mean, the only thing we gather is that when Mia kills herself, she goes to the hospital, like we said, and then they just like, oh, Riley got really better. So there's a safe bet that he doesn't remember any of that, possibly. Yeah. That he just kind of, you know, like got better. He got warded off all the whatever the fuck was haunting him, and that was it. It was
yeah, because according to the brother of the guy that died at the beginning, the longer these things stay in you, the weaker they get, and eventually they just get kicked out.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That was like pretty convenient.
Convenient. But, somebody had to explain that.
Yeah. Which is why I think the things were so desperate to have Riley get killed. So you would get stuck there.
Yeah.
So it also begs another question. Like if these people randomly died any point in their lives, are they stuck to this hand as well?
I want to say...
Or is it only because she did it for too long?
I think the hand... I don't know if they're... That's an interesting question, because I'm not... I interpreted it like they weren't necessarily tied to the hand. The hand was the sort of, like, gateway to whatever, yeah, the like, connecting tissue to the spirit world, to the real world. Not for... There was no, like... That's interesting if the hand was haunted and that was a shit in the hand. That's...
Well, yeah, for sure it was a conduit to the other side, but it was allegedly an actual person's hand that they chopped off of a dead body, which I think I mentioned. I was convinced that the end of the movie was going to show like some dude who's missing an arm and he was actually still alive or whatever.
Yeah. They do mention there's a second one, which I thought that the people we meet at the end who are from another country who I didn't quite catch the language. So yeah, is the other part of the hand. It's just another version of the hand. But I wasn't 100% sure. I have to watch the movie again.
Another version of the hand?
Because there's two. Yeah, I very well could be the same hand. I just thought, like, well, maybe I thought it was... They did mention there was a second hand. So there could be two of these for a sequel.
I don't...
Two hands.
Recall they're mentioning a second hand.
Yeah. There's the...
I know they cut off the hand of this guy because they said this was the hand that he was able to, like, do that with. So when he died, they chopped it off.
That story... I feel like it's said at a time, it's sort of said to him, but it's not that, but it just sounds like something they just like something somebody said, you know, like a rumor. That's kind of how I took after the fact. Once I heard it, I was like, okay, well, that's the explanation of it. But then when they actually, well, as the movie goes on, I don't know. It just seems less clear if that's where the hand originated from.
Yeah, it could have just been a story made of. That's true. They even actually poke fun at that too. Like, I think somebody mentioned something else about it and they're like, come on. So where's this then? They're like, all right, you're right. We don't know where this hand came from.
Okay. Yeah. I think, maybe now that I'm thinking, maybe they didn't mention the second hand. I thought there was a second hand. I thought they mentioned it, but you're right. I could have.
It's also, we would have to go back and freeze frame. Cause I think the hand was still facing the same direction. So it wouldn't be a left hand.
Right. Right, right. Yeah, I didn't pay enough attention to it. I just was, I have to go back and watch it again.
Because my thinking is, you know how she keeps jumping through time now that she's passed? This could be whatever distant future, and this hand has finally made its way to over there. Because I know we were kind of questioning, like, but I thought the hand was, like, at the apartment. It was still, I'm not at the house, sorry. It was still at her dad's house, because she had, like, taken it for a while, but I think so much time has passed, this hand could have been stolen.
We know for a fact that time has passed, because we can assume that the stuff with the boy getting better and leaving the hospital is it's like time passing by. Like, yeah.
Oh, that's what I mean. That's what I'm trying to get.
Oh, okay,
like,
okay.
We have no idea how much time has passed, so we don't know if this thing got stolen or, like, you know, it just eventually, like,
how far in the future we are. And
It Avengers Endgame ran across a keyboard and stole his hand.
Scratched, was it Samuel Jackson's eye out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Cool. Do you have any other last thoughts before we go into re-rate the movie?
No. Except that you should go watch this movie because it'll split ya.
Make sure you get there early, so you know. No, I'm just kidding.
Crack open a cold brew.
Not to be That's such a funny scene.
A cold just, beer, but yeah. And I was like, it was a nitro cold brew too, so I kept like flipping the can ups and down. Like, you know, and I was like, it. Oh my God, I hope I didn't do it too much. I was going to spray everywhere.
Yeah, that would be funny. Yeah, all right. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Relax.
don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Talk to Me 8 sexy, spooky bones. I was actually trying to remember what I gave Smile. I want to give it the same score.
Yeah, I think that's close. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I probably should write this stuff down. But it's 3 years of work to do. Alrighty, I'll probably give it a 9. I really enjoyed it. I think it's an original horror movie. And it's really, for really good movie, probably the best horror movie I've seen this year. Like, yeah, released this year. Like,
released this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's original. It's fun. I think if you go watch it in the theater, in a really nice theater with great sound, because there's really good, like, shit going on, like, sound editing and stuff. The sound mix is really good. Everything. So.
And also, I was going to familiarize myself with the soundtrack, because I did enjoy whatever songs they played. I was like, these are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really fun movie.
Quick thing. Were you having trouble trying to figure out what time period this was supposed to be? Because, like, some of the music and some of the clothing choices and all that, and then the ringtone made me think it was like, is this supposed to be like between 2011 and 2015? But then the cell phones were all wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Maybe it did happen. I think they do enough of a job to, like, not distinguish what time it is. But yeah, you're right. Like, if you actually pay attention to, like, the technology and stuff like that, it is very kind of dated.
The cars, yeah.
You're right about that. Yeah, yeah. The phones are... But I honestly chalk that up to my ignorance. Like, I don't know what Australia's up. What year Australia's in right now. So, I don't know. I'm assuming they have all the same stuff, but different.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
It's probably all the same exact stuff.
I want to say Mia had a more modern phone than the sister, who I don't remember her name. But her phone had a very... funny, like, ringtone.
That's what it was, a sister's ringtone, and it was a stupid frog. That's, yeah, what, not the frog. Yeah, the blue frog, right? The,
or
ring, 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 ring.
Or anime. What is it? Like, the, yeah, so it could have been like early 2000s, right? That kind of time.
That's what I was thinking. That's why, like, what was the cell phone then? Like, the, well, that's what I'm saying. It, I don't think it checks either. I don't know.
We'd have to look at the technology they're holding and dealing. Oh, what year did that Sia song come out? Because they did sing that song.
Chandelier, that's right.
So whatever year that fucking song came out, that's the year this movie is in.
There you go.
20.
But again, you could chalk it up to be, because Sia is Australian, so it could just be an Australian.
So it's anywhere between any time after when that song was released. So, yeah. So there,
it's true.
There we go.
Here you go.
Yeah,
we figured it.
We figured it out, guys. We're good. We got it. We got it. Don't worry.
And that's why now I'm giving it an 8.5.
Oh, nice. 8.5. Should I give it 9.5? Maybe I'll give it 9.5.
It doesn't matter, because everybody stopped listening. Like,
yeah, this has been going on for very long. So let's wrap it up. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.